Crawford closest to the bag. Here's a 1-2 and a shot into right center. A base hit for Bellinger. Justin Turner will score. Lux to third. Cody Bellinger delivers in the clutch. An RBI single.
Scherzer to Flores. Just outside. He went around. Strike three. Gabe Morales, the first base umpire. The Dodgers are going to the National League Championship Series.
Just how you draw it up. Two 109 win teams. Everything's going great until the final call of the game by the umpire. You know, I love sports, but at the end of the day, I just want no controversy. I just want the team to win and the other team not to have excuses. And after watching that game last night, and I tuned in about the sixth inning, and I watched every second of the rest of the way, it was riveting baseball. The Dodgers took a lead, and then the Giants came right back with one swing of the bat, tied it. I didn't understand some of the moves the Dodgers made. Why were you bunting with a runner at first and third up one in the top of the ninth with one out? I don't understand that. And they popped right up to the first baseman, killed the rest of that rally. I didn't understand why they didn't do a double switch, so Blake Treinen, who was unhittable in this series, could have thrown two innings. He only threw 12 pitches. They could have double switch when they brought him in, and then Jansen was the guy in the eighth, and that's your closer. So then they go to Max Scherzer, who never had a professional save in his Major League Baseball career, but he pitched just 2 days ago, and they bring him in to close. I'm like, well, this usually doesn't work out too well, and you put a guy in a different role. Mm-hmm. It's like it's completely different than you normally do, and I'm all for the closer coming in a little bit earlier than necessary, it is necessary, but coming in earlier in elimination games, you know, usually closers get three outs, come in with a clean, nobody on the base paths or whatever else. And when you get to the playoffs, as we saw with the Royals in 14 and 15, hey, if Herrera's got to throw three innings, he throws three innings. If Davis has got to throw two, he throws two. If Holland's got to throw two, he throws two. That's just how it was. Madsen, and I get it. The Dodgers made some interesting decisions. The Giants had a rookie that was their closer in the month of September who was almost unhittable, but the Dodgers get to him. And Cody Bellinger, who had absolutely done nothing this year, who was MVP just 2 years ago, hit 165 this year, which is the worst batting average in Major League Baseball, or one of the worst, with at least 300 at-bats. He came through with the big hit, as you just heard, to win the ball game. And then, of course, Scherzer comes in. The Giants have a runner at first. There are two outs, and Wilmer Flores did not look good against Max Scherzer. And he checks his swing, and right away, watching it live, my oldest son and I are watching, like, oh, he didn't go. And they punched him out. I'm like, well, I want to see the replay on that bad boy.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even close.
Yeah, replays made it worse.
So I don't know how an umpire can call something that he couldn't have possibly have seen. And to me, it's a 50-50 shot at getting it right, obviously. It's either right or wrong. Mm. And I've seen many times where you give the benefit of the doubt to the hitter. Now, granted, had he gone around and he called that he didn't go around and he hits a home run, then the Dodgers are screaming today going, why didn't he call it? So, I don't want to be an umpire. I know it's never easy. Check swings are hard, too, down the lines. Mm-hmm. It's not an exact science. I guess my question is this. Well, a couple things. One, first of all, I don't like it because it gives the Giants an excuse and it mars what was a great game and great series between the two best teams in baseball. I don't think the Giants are going to win anyway. That would have been 1-2. The count would have been 1-2 on Flores, who was hitting under 100 the whole playoffs. So the odds of him, they needed probably two hits to score Bryant to tie the game. Unless, and Flores really wasn't a threat to hit a homer, I don't think. So I don't think it would have mattered, but we should have had more drama. We shouldn't have ended on that. And here's the other point. We're all about replay getting it right. And then this is not reviewable. Check swings are not reviewable. And I don't like that stuff. When they say stuff isn't reviewable, then why are we just going halfway when it comes to instant replay? Let's either be all out or all in. I don't like that. And I know you shouldn't have to review every single thing. Listen, if there's a controversial 1-2 pitch and you got so many challenges, I think it should be so many challenges per baseball team, just like you have in the National Football League. You give them three challenges, give them three, okay? If you want to challenge a 1-2 pitch and the umpire called it a strike three and it clearly was outside, why can't you? You got a box that we have technology. We can see it as a fan at home. Why can't you call New York and say, all right, they're challenging the 1-2 pitch? Now, that means that when you're limited to three challenges, you can't challenge every pitch. You're going to pick your spots.
Yeah.
So if the Giants had used up their three challenges, okay, that's on them. And usually in a game like that, you're going to want to save one for something like that. So why can't a check swing be challengeable? Why can't it be reviewable? Why can't a 1-2 pitch or a 3-2 pitch that you know is a strike and it's a walk and forces in a run with the bases loaded? I mean, why can't you go back and look at it and go, oh, you know what? Boom, that's clearly a strike. It's conclusive. It's a strike. And thus, the inning is over and no run scores. If we're all about getting it right, then why aren't we all in? That's the part I don't understand. I mean, I know you can't review every single thing. Well, then put the onus on the managers. We do it in other sports. You put the onus on the managers. And so you say, listen, you get two challenges a game, or you get three, or you get two, and if you get the first one right, you keep your two, so then you'd have three. Or whatever. You could have five. I don't care what you want to do. But last night, that game to end on a check swing that clearly he didn't go around, and I don't think it would have mattered had it been called a ball and he didn't go around. But we'll never know. That's the problem.
Yeah.
We were robbed of that tremendous drama. We'd been building to a crescendo. And that's the dud we get at the very end, and that's what we remember. And that mars what was an unbelievable series, an unbelievable game last night. Great pitching. I mean, Justin Turner was the hero, then the goat, and then survived. Justin Turner last night, he got hit by a pitch to start the ninth. He came around the score. Then the bottom of the ninth, it wasn't that hard of a play down the line on a grounder. He booted it. So now there's a runner at first. It should have been out number two. And I'm sitting here going, oh, boy, Dodgers are going to lose this thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't like Scherzer being the closer because he's never closed before. And they get bailed out, if you want to call it bailed out, by a check swing called by the umpire. I feel sorry for the umpire because he's never going to live it down. Everybody knows his name. He missed it. Kind of like Don Dinkinger missed the call between the Cardinals and the Royals. Sorry, Royals fans. George Odo was out by a whole step. Replay proved that. Now, I will say right after that, the Cardinals had all kinds of chances. There was a pass ball. They dropped a pop-up. I mean, the Cardinals could easily – and Odo was thrown out second, by the way, in that 85 game mm-hmm. seven or game six because the Royals tried to bunt him, and he was thrown out at second. So Odo was erased anyway. But the bottom line is that Don Dinkinger dealt with death threats and everything else. Made an honest mistake. It was a bad mistake. He missed it. But nobody's perfect. Gabe Morales, I'm sure, is getting death threats today. I guarantee you. I don't have to read it to know mm-hmm. Because that's the way society is. We forget it's just a game and it's a sport. It really is a bummer. It was going to be a bummer no matter what last night, whoever lost. A team that won 109 games was not going to move on. That's the bummer. It should have been the World Series. Now, can you imagine this has been Game 7 of the World Series, and that's what the World Series ended like that? Can you imagine? I mean, that would be nutty and crazy and unfair and insane. So it was Game 5 of the Divisional Series, and it ends like that, and it marred what was a great series. And I, for the Giants, you're bummed no matter what when you lose. But then to lose on a call to where you should have at least got to see one more pitch, you feel like you were robbed, even though technically you don't know if you would have come through anyway.
Yeah.
The point is you should have been able to swing one more pitch.
Yeah, at that point, I mean, there's rules of the game for a reason, right?
Right.
Like, he didn't go around, so yeah, you feel like you were robbed because that was the last chance you had.
The very last call.
It was over.
Yeah, your season's over on that call.
Yeah, that's not.
And you can't review it. You can't review it.
Game 114 of 162. This is game five of your chance to move on to the next series.
Right.
And your season is done.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you, I mean, they have a right to be frustrated with that. No matter if they know what would have happened after that or not.
Sure.
They do know that their season was over based on a call that was incorrect.
I will say this. I didn't really care who won last night. I just was like, whoever wins it, earn it, and I didn't want controversy. I always want a great game. I don't want controversy. At the end of the day, I would like the team to go down and win the game, not somebody being a goat. I don't want a player booting the ball for an error that cost them the game. I don't want to see a hit batter with the bases loaded and the pitcher's got to live with that for the rest of his life. I don't want the ball going through the legs of Billy Buckner again. I don't want any player to go through that for the rest of their life. I just simply want the other team to earn it. You know, like, hey, it was a good pitch, and he hit a double, and that won the game. Instead of he served up a home run, which the pitcher's always going to feel bad about that, whether it's a good pitch or a bad pitch. Mm-hmm. But I don't like umpires deciding something at the end, or referees. And the umpire is human, so I feel for him because he made a mistake. I'm sure he went back and goes, oh, dear Lord, I missed it. I guarantee you he watched it. He was like, I missed it. And I feel for him. And that's the other thing about replay. Replay, we talked to Todd Tischner, a Major League Baseball umpire from Southwest Kansas, on our show multiple times. And the replay is about, you know, getting it right. But two, it also protects the umpires a little bit more. Mm. Don Dinkinger had no protection in 1985. Had he had replay, that would have been overturned, and nobody would have been sending him death threats. That's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
So now, fast forward to 2021, now you have replay, you have all the technology in the world, we can see clearly within seconds, and we knew it live when we watched it, but you know that he didn't go around. Why can't the umpires review that, or at least an umpire could challenge it? That, to me, is why I'm so sick of replay. I love replay from the standpoint it's about getting it right. We have definitely got more calls right than wrong. You can argue and complain about the length of the delays and getting it right. I don't like it either. It ruins the momentum and the flow, but at the same time, if they get it right, I can live with it. What upsets me is when there's something that is clearly wrong and then they hide behind the, well, it's not reviewable. Why the hell should anything not be reviewable when we have all the technology in the world? We have instant replay. Why can't we? We can review it. You know why I know that? Because we reviewed it on national television.
5 times within a minute.
So why don't the umpires, they have that tool to protect them so many other times. Now, the biggest game of the year between two 109-win teams and rivals, the end of the season for the Giants, and it's a bad call that can't be corrected but should easily have been corrected. It's not like we don't have a view of the swing. We have a view. It'd be one thing to say, well, we didn't have a right proper camera angle. No, you did. You did. It was clear to everybody, all right, that he did not go around. That's very fixable and correctable. And then it's not reviewable. That's the part that drives me nuts about instant replay. Every single thing should be reviewable. Now, what I want to say is, let's differentiate between the two. Every single play should be reviewable. That doesn't mean every single play should be reviewed. What I'm saying is every play is reviewable. There should be nothing out there that they say can't be reviewed. There shouldn't be a single thing in any sporting event that can't be reviewed. The question then is to limit to where we don't have 42 reviews every single game. You put the onus on the guys that lead the prospective teams. That's your coaches and managers. And then you can come up with whatever plan you want, ladies and gentlemen. You can have your own instant replay plan. If you want to say each team gets 2 challenges or 3 challenges or 4 challenges or 5 challenges, or you get a bonus challenge for getting it right and you lose a challenge when you get it wrong, I don't care what system you want to put together. But then the managers would have that in their back pocket. And listen, it's kind of like timeouts. You usually save one for the end of the game, don't you?
Yeah.
Usually you do. So you save your challenges. Now, there might be a time where there's a very big call that might decide the game in the 6th inning, and the manager decides, you know what, I'm not going to review this because I'm down to 1 challenge because I might need it in the bottom of the 9th. And then the game goes by, and he holds that challenge in his back pocket, never used it, then goes back and says, well, I wish I would have used it in 6th inning. But you know what that does? It protects the umpires, because then they can say, well, you know, they missed the call in the 6th, but the manager could have easily challenged it and chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the system you need. And Major League Baseball, once again, is what should have been a crowning moment last night, ends in controversy, because baseball, and not just baseball, replay as itself is a flawed system that is not perfect, nor will it probably ever be, but there's an easy way to fix it. Super easy.
It's too easy. What you're talking about is too easy. It's easy to fix.
I'm not a surgeon or rocket scientist. I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express once, a Super 8, whatever else. But, I mean, come on, man. It's not that difficult. How can we not figure this out?
It's not rocket surgery like George Bush said.
That's exactly right. It's not rocket surgery. Yeah, I've done surgery on a rocket before, and it blew up in my face.
It's just
silly, doesn't it? And it's like baseball being behind the times again.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. The NBA, under 2 minutes, everything's reviewable. Yeah. Why couldn't you do that with baseball? Yeah. You know, everything's reviewable starting in the 9th. Now, I think that might be too much in baseball because there's every single pitch. You don't want to do that. But anyway, go ahead.
It's a final out. I mean...
Yes.
It needs to be reviewable. And especially when you can see 5 replays within a minute after it happens, and every one of them shows that he did not go. It needs to be reviewable.
Yes.
It's pretty obvious.
Yes, it is.
And like you said with the live thing, like you can see.
We saw it right away.
You can see where that bat kind of looks like it's maybe a little bit level to where it might be close.
Mm-hmm.
This thing was, you could still see it cocked back toward him. Like it was not.
I've seen that check swing a million times in my life, and it's just almost like a little mini loop.
It's low, and he barely moved his wrist, and it's like, how did he go?
To me, the only
right away when they said it, and I'm like, then I watched the replay, and I'm like, oh.
One way to know he goes is with where his wrists are.
Yeah.
And if his wrists are forward, odds are he went. If his wrists are back, odds are he didn't.
Yeah. I mean, that's just physics, right?
Yeah. I studied it. Apparently,
yeah, I didn't,
the umpire
but I know
didn't.
Some things about it.
Yeah. Once again, I feel for the umpire, I feel for the Giants. I still think the Dodgers would have won anyway.
I do too, but.
But then it just puts a big black eye on it. That's what's so unfortunate. Man, that was a great game, too. So now the Dodgers will go to the Braves, which makes complete sense. The Dodgers won 18 more games than the Braves, and they'll go to Atlanta. Now, I'm not a Dodger fan. I'm just saying that's not right. The Braves are in the worst division in all of baseball, and the Dodgers were in the best division. And I was talking this over with my oldest son last night. I know you hate this because I remember the Seahawks were, 7-9 or 8-8 in NFL playoffs?
7-9, yeah.
They were 7-9, a losing record, won a horrible division. Obviously, you're 7-9, winning a division. The division stinks. And the Saints were 11-5, I believe, and they lost their division to a team that went 12-4. So the Saints had to go all the way from New Orleans to Seattle, and Seattle won that playoff game. And here's my thing. Here's my thing, and my oldest son and I were agreeing on this, and sometimes we don't agree on these things, but it was very interesting last night. We were talking this over after the game, and the Dodgers had won, and I told him they're going to go to the Braves, and he said, that makes no sense. And I said, well, welcome to Major League Baseball. But here's the thing. This could easily be solved as well. To me, if you want to put emphasis on division winners, that's fine. You go ahead and seed it that way. So if you want to seed, there were five teams that make the playoffs from each league, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, you got five teams, three division winners, two wild cards. So you seed it. So your best record of the division winners is one. The second best divisional winner is two. The third or worst divisional winner is three. Now, granted, that three seed might be seeded higher than a wild card team that won 100 games or the Dodgers at 106. Okay, are you with me?
Yeah.
So you reward the division winner by making sure they're not in a wild card game. This is the benefit. Even if you're in a bad division, you benefit by winning your division, and the reward is you're going to not have to play in the one game winner play all wild card game. That's quite a reward, I think. Okay. Then once you play the first series, or you could argue once the wild card game is decided, you seed it by record. You seed it by record. Or the other thing you could do is you can keep the seeding as you've got it. So the Dodgers right now are the five seed, all right? They're the five seed. Or no, they were the four seed.
Yeah.
The Braves are the three seed, okay? That's how it is. The Braves are a higher seed. The Dodgers won 18 more games. To me, the seeding goes out the window when you go into the next round. You just go off of who had the better record. So to me, right now, the Braves should be playing in L.A. The Dodgers should benefit from winning 18 more games. And here's the funny thing. People can argue, well, you should need to value the division winner. If you had the least amount of wins in your division, that tells me your division wasn't any good. Mm-hmm. And if you had a whole bunch of wins and didn't win your division, that tells you you had one heck of a team above you, which means your division was pretty tough. And in Major League Baseball, you have the unbalanced schedule, so you play 19 games against that team that won 107 games like the Dodgers did. And by the way, the Dodgers and Giants played 24 times this year, 12 and 12. They should play one more, especially after that bad call last night. One more. But I do not know. I mean, the NBA's done it, haven't they, if I remember right? The NBA does it.
NBA seeds their playoffs based on record now.
Yeah.
I mean, you get in if you win a division. Right. Like, if somebody has a better record at 9 than one of the division winners, they still get in.
Right.
But they're not seeded higher based on winning their division. The NBA seeds their playoffs based on record.
It seemed like
And somebody's like, well, why have divisions then if you're not going to seed it and give the division winner the high priority? I'm like, the point of the division is to get the playoffs.
You automatically got your spot.
And then after that, you go where your record puts you.
Well, and I think at one point the NBA had it. I think they, if I remember right, they kind of took it a step by a step, because it seemed like there was one time where they had it to where, your division winners were in and so forth and so on. I'm trying to remember how they did this, if I remember this correctly. But then if it was a 5 versus a 4, whoever had the better record still got to get home court. So they would still say that was the first step in fixing it. Right.
Because for a long time, when they had the three divisions, they were the top three seeds.
Right.
Whoever won those three divisions.
Right.
Now there's four divisions, and then they kind of kept that same deal for only a little bit. But then they said, okay, we're going to give you the seed, but you're still going to not be the home team if you're 4 and 5 has a better record than you. You don't have home court. Now it's just straight.
Yeah.
You're seeded based on record.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with that, too.
The NHL reseeds after the first round.
Which I'm okay with that as well.
They just redo it.
And I would argue that's what Major League Baseball should do.
And the NFL kind of reseeds after the first round. It's a little different because you can't get higher than 5 if you didn't win, or 4, I guess,
They
kind of like
do.
A reseeding because you one can't play.
Right.
Three of six is available to play, right?
But they reward the best record.
They reward the best record. It's not technically reseeding. It's just giving you the lowest seed to play if you're the higher seed.
I guess in NFL, technically, you could have the second best record be a wild card.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they would not be the two seed.
Yeah.
And they don't reseed it after that. They're still the six seed.
Yeah,
or whatever.
The wild card wins and then
they don't reseed it.
But they won't have to, if you're the best wild card, you won't have to take on the one seed right away.
Right.
When you get into the next second.
But you don't get a home game even though you have more wins.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's still a flaw there too.
Yeah, yeah.
So interesting. All right, we got a lot to get to, so let's move on. Local sports, I'll turn it over to Dusty.
Yeah, we'll start with some results from last night's action here in the area. As we had the Lakeside Invitational MPL North Central Activities Association Cross Country meet yesterday in Downs. Team-wise, Southeast Saline won both the Invitational and NCAA League Championships, boys and girls, and then boys and girls MPL Championship both went to Osborne there yesterday. Top finishers from the area as Gracie Enix of Smith Center was fourth. Jane Letourneau of St. John's finished eighth in the overall race, but first in the Northern Plains League. Gentry Alderson of Southeast Saline won the overall and NCAA League Championship. And then moving on to the boys' side of things, Dylan Sprecher of Southeast ran away with the championship, both Invitational and NCAA. Lance Landino Beloit was fifth place in both the Invitational and NCAA race. And Osborne's Graham Bales finished ninth overall, but first as the NPL representative there, the gold medal winners. So you can find full results. It would take way too long to go through all that. We had a lot of area athletes that did a lot of great things yesterday at the Downs at the Lakeside Invitational, MPL, and NCAA meet. They're all posted. Full results at ncksports.com. Also, the NPL volleyball tournament will be tomorrow. Mid-Continent League started last night. Pool B, Smith Center hosting that, and they won both their matches. They beat Hill City in two and beat Hoxie in two. They dominated both of those matches. As Smith Center is now 32-2 on the season, and they move on to the finals coming up on Saturday at Phillipsburg along with TMP Marion, Phillipsburg, and Ellis. All four of those teams will play each other in a round robin starting at 1 o'clock tomorrow in Phillipsburg, and whoever has the best record and comes out of that on top will be the champion of the Mid-Continent League tournament. We have the full schedule for the Mid-Continent League tournament and the Northern Plains League tournament posted at ncksports.com. So everything you need to know about the local sports also in the area posted there at ncksports.com. 3-2-1A state tennis is getting underway today in Wichita at Mays South High School. Four area athletes have qualified for the state tournament. In singles, Gracie Reiner and Blair Walters of Osborne are headed to state, and Tatum Teachins-Peters and Ashlyn Knight of Beloit qualifying in doubles at regionals last week. In singles, Gracie Reiner 21-7, Blair Walters is 20-7 this season. And the head coach of the Lady Bulldogs, we had a chance to talk with Brandy Miner, and she gave her thoughts about the girls and what they how their season's gone and what they hope to do this weekend.
I feel really good about the way that they've played this year. Gracie Reiner, she's played through some adversity. She's broken strings and just got a new racket and kept on playing. Blair Walters has been playing really strong. She really came on the last few weeks, and I think they're both going to do well at state. Hopefully we come home with medals. Absolutely. We're looking forward to just doing our best there and having some fun and enjoying ourselves and playing good tennis.
Reiner opens a tournament against Liberty Gilkey of Kiowa County, who's 22-6. Walters will face Mallory Cup of Scott City, who's 23-11 in the first round coming up this morning. For the Beloit Lady Trojans, again, Tatum Teachins-Peters and Ashlyn Knight, they're 17-9 on the year, and Beloit coach Daryl Kelly likes the way they're playing right now and gave thoughts on their state prospects.
They've been playing really well. The last week of the season they came on, made a lot of progress, and they played well at the Ellsworth tournament, which was the last one of the year. Yeah, I think we looked pretty good. We won two on Saturday. The first one got us two state, and the second one got us a little better seed. And so we got a fifth seed going in. We're playing the number four. And so, you know, four or five matchups usually pretty close, and that's kind of what we're looking for. But, you know, we just have to play well. I mean, Tatum's a senior. She needs to lead us, and Ash is just a sophomore, and then Tatum needs to take control early in the matches.
Teachins Peters and Knight will open against Cassie Albin and Corey Kramer of Heston, who are 13-13 but have played a tough schedule this year. Pre-tournament festivities for state tennis begin at 10 o'clock this morning. Competition starting at 10:30 there in Northwest Wichita at Mays South High School here today. All the tennis information also posted at ncksports.com. All right, high school football coming up tonight as well, and our game.
Can I stop here a second?
Okay, yeah.
I just want to make sure because I was distracted a little bit there doing some other stuff, but I just want to make sure you covered cross country too.
Yes,
you covered
I did.
That. Okay,
yep.
Good. All right, I did.
For some reason,
I didn't hear that, so I tuned you out. My apologies.
Started with cross country, volleyball.
Oh, you started with it. Well, yep. Gershner, pay attention.
It was right there.
I thought you started with state tennis. That's what I was focused on because I had to play cuts. But
yeah.
No, you started with cross country. So you went outside the order that I typed up, Dustin.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's all right. So
I went with stuff that was already done instead
of cross country, and then you went tennis, and then you did volleyball.
I did cross country, volleyball, and then
okay,
tennis.
Perfect.
Because I knew I wanted to take some time because you
awesome.
Were
awesome. Perfect.
Doing
thank,
stuff.
Thank God it's Friday. I need the weekend. All right, now you can move on.
Hey, high school football.
As normal, Dusty's all over it. You know,
high school football tonight on Kitty Country 94. We have St. John's Tipton at Lakeside. 8 Main Division 2 District 4 on Kitty Country 94, pregame 6:30 kickoff at 7 o'clock. And then on Z96.3 through the Lake LeBoyer Trojan Channel, NCKSSports.com, Beloit at Minneapolis and 2A District 8 action. Same time, pregame 6:30 and kickoff at 7 o'clock. We'll hear from coaches coming up momentarily on that. Other games tonight, 8 Main Division 2 District 4, Pike Valley at Rock Hills this evening. Southern Cloud at Osborne has been canceled. Southern Cloud, not enough players to go, so Osborne gets a forfeit win there, and that basically wraps up the number two spot in the district for Osborne tonight. So this district, it's coming down not at all like we might have planned this year. It's pretty structured right now going into week seven of the season. Also, non-district game tonight, Thunder Ridge taking on Frankfort. It was Sylvan Lucas hosting Wilson in District 5 and D2. Lincoln hosting Bennington in 8-man Division 1, District 4. And Smith Center's at home against El Saline tonight, 1A District 3. So those are the immediate area games. We'll preview all of the games coming up on the Football Express tonight at 5:40, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable on Katy Country 94. And we will conclude our game night coverage with the local high school football scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne about 10:05 here tonight. So stay tuned for all of that this evening as well.
Very good. Before we hear from some of the coaches of the games you're doing on the radio, I want to point out some interesting things. Class 2A football tonight. It's number one and defending champion Rossville at number two Silver Lake. And the third-ranked team in 2A right now, Wellsville, who's undefeated, has to play 5-1 Humboldt. So the top three teams in 2A, severe test tonight. Just something that popped out. Like the War on 24 is quite a rivalry between Rossville and Silver Lake. And what usually happens is that's the first of two meetings. Usually.
Now,
last
year
it did not happen.
Yeah.
So
and Nemaha Central that beat Silver Lake last year,
right?
And played Rossville.
And I looked ahead. If the winner of Rossville Silver Lake will probably be the district champion, Nemaha Central will probably play either Silver Lake or Rossville in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Hello. Okay, to the games we have on the radio tonight. St. John's Tipton is at Lakeside and Downs. Dusty and Parker with the call tonight. Here is Coach Dusky on the mindset his team has going into St. John's Tipton's game tonight.
Stay focused on the larger goal. And play hard. You know, it's the same philosophy we had going in the Pike Valley game. Whoever's got the ball, you got to wrap up, you got to tackle offensively, maintain your blocks, you know, run the ball hard. I thought we did a good job on the ground running the ball against Pike Valley, and that's got to carry over to this game. You know, Kylan and Jace, they'll get their time, but we need to establish a strong running game and keep the defense honest.
And Dean Gingham, head coach St. John's Tipton Lakeside, not just a passing team.
They definitely have the ability to do both. Egan had a pretty decent game against us last year, so we know he can run. He's a year older again, stronger. And you know, I guess for them, same as us, it's a matter of what people get if and they were able to get the run game against Pike Valley going and stuck with that quite a bit more than I think they might in some other cases. But we all are kind of looking for what works in that game, and sometimes that's what you expect and sometimes it isn't. But we know they have the ability to do both, so we've got to be able to defend both.
You know, this game, pretty much the winner is going to be the 3 seed out of this district. Loser will be the 4, more than likely. Of course, Osborne will be the 2, and Thunder Ridge has wrapped up the district championship. Really, for all intents and purposes, this game is to win and avoid Axtell.
Yeah. Would actually probably get Frankfort in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah, and like I said, with Southern Cloud forfeiting, not that Osborne might have had an issue with them, but that guarantees it now.
Yeah.
It's done. Number two is Osborne, and it will be number three. Whoever wins this game tonight will be number three. That there is a scenario if Lakeside would win tonight, that if Rock Hills beats Pike Valley tonight, then could get interesting with Rock Hills and St. John's Tipton next week for that 4
that's
spot
true.
Too. So, but again, that's where we're at right now as far as that's concerned. We do know the winner tonight is 3, based on the standings. And so there's still a lot to play for, like you said, a chance to avoid Axtell, who's number one and really has looked the best out of that district in the season so far. So, yeah, and the matchup, it's hard to pick for me right now because both teams, you know, comparative scores are very comparative in all the wins and losses that they've had in this district. And both teams have struggled with Thunder Ridge and Osborne, and everybody has. And now you got to try to figure out, you know, the strengths of your team. And it's 50-50 for me tonight. It's a tough one to pick for sure.
I think the game's going to last a while because I think there are going to be a lot of touchdowns.
I don't think I'm going to have a 45-point rule for the second straight week. We'll knock on wood and hope that doesn't happen.
I don't know, man. That's pretty brave of you to say with all the games you've done this year that you didn't think were going to, and then they were.
Yeah,
so.
This one's a matchup that
– I agree with you, though.
It's hard to find the team that's going to do that.
Yeah, I think both teams are going to score quite a bit.
The other ones in the back of my mind, I can think, you know, if something goes wrong, it might happen here.
Yeah. All right, so that's the game of the week tonight on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. St. John's Tipton at Lakeside from Downs. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7. On Z96.3 The Lake, the Beloit Trojans try to win their fourth in a row to improve the 4-0 in district play. They're at Minneapolis. Minneapolis 2-1 in district play. Minneapolis defense and their two district wins have given up just one touchdown. One touchdown to Norton in a 15-7 win. One touchdown last week, beating Phillipsburg 12-7 in the final seconds. Coach Gober of Beloit, certainly aware of Minneapolis's defensive capabilities.
Their defense has done a good job. You know, they play really hard on defense, and they understand what their jobs are. And, you know, they come after you a little bit. And so, you know, we're going to have to be ready for that and, you know, be ready for an aggressive defense coming at us. And then defensively, it just comes down to us. You know, we got to freaking continue to play hard and play as tough as you can. And as long as we do that, you know, we're going to be okay.
Well, we'll have Grady Cypher back. He missed last week's game due to illness against Norton. That's a huge person now back in the lineup, both on offense and on defense. Minneapolis, a team offensively, has struggled, only averaging 3.5 yards a carry, only 167 yards per game, and they've really struggled to score points, so they've relied on their defense. Tom Flax, third-year head coach for the Lions, on the Beloit Trojan mentality.
They come at you, you know, on both sides of the ball. They're physical. They want to get after you. They want to get in your face. You know, they want to reset the line of scrimmage. They do some things that make you be on your game right away. They're going to come out at you. Offensively, they're not going to mess around. They're going to break the huddle, sprint up the line every single time, and they're going to, you know, check your whole car. They're going to bring it at you. And really, if they like something, they're going to run it multiple times until you stop it. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge up front.
All right, so Beloit at Minneapolis tonight on Z96.3 Lake. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7. Also, live video stream at ncksports.com by the Beloit Trojan Channel. If Beloit wins tonight in Minneapolis and they're favored to do so, and Hoisington wins against Norton, they're favored to do so, you would have Hoisington Beloit wrapping up the top two spots in the district, and the Beloit Hoisington game at Trojan Field in Beloit next Friday, which we'll have on KD Country 94, would be to decide the district champion and the one seed out of the district. The two teams did play twice last year. Hoisington won both meetings, but Beloit certainly has many more guys back than Hoisington does. So that'll be something to keep an eye on, Norton and Hoisington tonight, along with Beloit Minneapolis in that 2A district. All right, back to all the scores, standings, latest athlete of the week, volleyball rankings, football rankings, state tennis qualifiers, and so much more available to you. Cross-country information, ncksports.com. Back to baseball for a moment. The American League Championship Series begins tonight. Red Sox at the Astros on Fox. First pitch at 7:07. And then tomorrow will be game two of that series there in Houston. And it'll be game one between the Dodgers and the Braves. Well, 1 week after losing the NL wildcard game to the Dodgers, St. Louis Cardinals have fired their manager, Mike Schilt. Say it carefully, is out as the club's manager, president of baseball operations as well. He replaced Mike Matheny on an interim basis in August 2018. Given the job permanently following that season, the Cardinals went 252-199 in parts of four seasons under Schilt. They won the Central Division title in 2019. He was named manager of the year that year. And St. Louis has gone to the postseason each of the last 3 years. They won 17 games in the month of September and then lost on a walk-off to perhaps the best team in baseball, the Dodgers, had one less win than the Giants, and he's gone. Philosophical differences.
Yeah.
What are they? The Nebraska Cornhuskers?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Firing coaches?
Yeah, this close to beating the Dodgers here now in the NLCS. Might win the World Series again this year, but see you later.
It's such a fine line for managers and coaches to keep their jobs. I go back to the NBA Finals. The Bucks if Kevin Durant's foot isn't on the line, the Nets win that series, the Bucks are eliminated, and Mike Budenholzer more than likely isn't the coach. Instead, his foot's on the line, the game's tied, they go to overtime, the Bucks win game seven, the Bucks then go on to win the NBA Finals, and he gets a contract extension. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant's big toe, seriously.
Yeah.
The difference between Mike Budenholzer getting a contract extension and being fired.
It's actually the difference because KD wears sizes that
one
are
size two, older,
one size bigger than what he should.
He does. And
so it's not even his big toe, it's his big shoe.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? That's nuts. All right, so there is a manager opening there with the Cardinals. The Padres have an opening with a lot of talent on their roster. They fired their manager. The Yankees have fired some of their coaches, but not their manager. Aaron Boone still will be the manager, it looks like, going into next year. All right, college football this weekend. Texas Tech is 4-2, 1-2 in the Big 12. They're a 16.5-point favorite at KU. KU's had 2 weeks to prepare for Texas Tech. The Jayhawks are 1-4, 0-2 in Big 12 play. And in their two losses in Big 12 action, they've been blown out 45-7 by Baylor and 59-7 by Iowa State. Pregame at 2:30 on Z96.3 Lake tomorrow. Kickoff at 3 on home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. Texas Tech leads the series 20-2. But the last two meetings have been very close. 2 years ago, last time in Lawrence, KU won 37-34 on a wild last-second field goal. And then last year, Texas Tech won the regular season finale 16-13. Lance Leipold, first-year head coach for KU. His thoughts on Texas Tech.
Another quality opponent. This is a team that has some depth because they've battled some injuries, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and continue to put up a lot of points. Played some other quality conference opponents. Very multiple in what they do and the looks they give you on both sides of the ball. Receivers that can stretch the field, running backs that create big plays. They've been explosive through the air and on the ground. So another huge challenge for us.
All right, so Texas Tech, a 16.5-point favorite. Who you got, and what's your final score of this one?
I'm going to take Texas Tech. Yeah, every time I say that KU is going to cover, they never do, and they get blown out. I'm going to say Tech 35-7.
35-7. I've got Tech winning, but KU covering since they had 2 weeks to prepare. 41-27. Because Tech's defense is not very good.
Yeah.
41-27. Is my call on that one. So we both think KU will lose, which that's not a shocker. In other KU-related news, officially cleared by the NCAA of any wrongdoing during his tenure as a head coach at the University of Kansas, and an at-times emotional David Beatty yesterday said he's eager to finally return to the profession he loves. Beatty spoke to reporters via video press conference from Dallas, along with a lawyer, to announce the IARP sent the former KU football coach and his attorneys a letter that stated he is no longer involved in the NCAA's case against the KU athletic department. One of the funny lines that I saw, and I'm paraphrasing here, according to one of his attorneys when they were discussing the situation, because Jeff Long, of course, was the AD at the time and kind of instigated the whole let's go ahead and try to get the money and withhold it or keep it from David Beatty and so forth and so on, said, well, he's no longer the AD at Kansas. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
Decent defense. All right, Iowa State is at K-State. Iowa State, a 6.5-point favorite. That's primetime 6:30 on ESPN2 tomorrow night. I know we'll both be there. Looking forward to that one. Iowa State's 3-2 overall, 1-1 in the Big 12. K-State trying to avoid an 0-3 start in the Big 12. They're 3-2 overall. Of course, in fairness, they lost to Oklahoma State on the road without Skylar Thompson. And then they lost to Oklahoma at home, who is the best team in the Big 12 after they beat Texas last week. Iowa State leads all-time series 51-49. Last year it was a blowout. 45-0. It was all Iowa State. Of course, K-State in that game was shorthanded, didn't have their full repertoire of players. Of course, Skylar Thompson was out as well. Skylar supposedly is getting even better since the Oklahoma game, which means he might be able to run the ball a little bit more in this contest. And usually when K-State and Iowa State play, especially when they play in Manhattan, it ends up being a very close game. And Coach Klieman realizes that K-State and Iowa State, it usually is tight.
I think both teams are very physical. I think both teams have playmakers. It still comes down to being able to make the plays at the right time. You know, we had an opportunity to answer a score last year and didn't do it. And then we turned the football over and it got away from us. The year before, we were able to capitalize on some turnovers when we were able to win at home a couple years ago. But they're tough because you have to be able to run the football against them, and they do a great job of stopping the run, and you have to be able to slow the run down against them. And I think they're two teams that know each other really well. I think when teams know each other pretty well have playmakers that make plays, you get for competitive games.
One thing about Iowa State, they got talent at quarterback, at running back, at wide receiver, as noted by Coach Klieman.
The running back's an exceptional player, and I think Purdy's a tremendous quarterback that sees the field really well and is a really smart player that puts the ball in the playmakers' hands. And they have a bunch of them, you know, tight ends and wide receivers that can make plays as well. So you can't say against these guys, boy, you just have to stop the run. You have to be able to control the run, but you can't neglect what they can do in the passing game.
All right, Iowa State is explosive offensively. I don't know why, but I've got a good feeling about K-State winning this game. But you know what? I had a good feeling about the Chiefs Sunday night, and that blew up in my face. Sometimes you get them right. Sometimes you get them wrong when it comes to predictions. Of course, turnovers are the great equalizer as well, you know, or your guy gets hurt. If Skylar Thompson gets hurt, that changes everything. You know, if Breece Hall gets hurt, that changes everything. Brock Purdy gets hurt, changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa State's a 6.5-point favorite. Who you got in this one, and what's your final score?
So, yeah, I'll say K-State covers. Okay. I'm going to say 27-24 Iowa State.
27-24 Iowa State. All right.
Might be shooting a little low there, but.
Okay. I will go with K-State winning in a thriller, 30-28. 30-28. Not only did they cover, they went outright. I'm picking K-State. Kiss of death. When I don't pick them, they win. And then when I pick them, I did pick OU to beat K-State last time. I did get that one right. But
yeah, I think we all did.
I think we did. We finally were like, come on, you just keep picking Oklahoma, you eventually get it right.
Three times in a row.
Against K-State. Other Big 12 games, Oklahoma State number 12, undefeated. Big game for the Cowboys at number 25, Texas. 4-point favorite are the Longhorns on Fox at 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. BYU ranked 19th in the country, 5-1 at Baylor, who's 5-1. And believe it or not, Baylor's a 6-point favorite at home against BYU. 2:30 game on ESPN. That's a really good matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Last time they played each other in college football, 1984.
Wow.
I was 8. How old were you then? He was 1.
1.
Once again, proving that he's much younger than me. TCU's at number 4, Oklahoma. The question, who's going to be the starting quarterback? I think it'll be Kalen Williams. I think Rattler will play as well. OU is a 13.5-point favorite. Primetime ABC tomorrow night at 6:30. OU won the last meeting 33-14. TCU 3-2 overall, 1-1 in the Big 12. OU 6-0, 3-0. We shift our attention to the Nebraska Cornhuskers as the Huskers are 3-4, 1-3 in the Big 10. They are a 3.5-point favorite at Minnesota, which I find interesting. Minnesota's 3-2, 1-1 in the Big 12. That's on ESPN2 tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. The Gophers have been up and down this year. They lost to Ohio State week one. They gave Ohio State all they could handle, but then they lost their running back in that game to an injury for the year, 45-31. Then they beat Colorado, shellacked them 30-0. Sorry, John Bowden. Then they lost to Bowling Green, 14-10. And then 2 weeks ago, they got by Purdue, 20-13. The Gophers have had 2 weeks to prepare for the Huskers. Couple notes about Minnesota. They have one of the Big Ten's best defenses. They rank second in the Big Ten and fifth nationally in rushing defense, only giving up 77 yards a game. They're also strong in scoring defense, giving up just 20 points a game, and total defense only 308 yards a game. Minnesota has a strong run game, so they can control the clock a little bit, and they're one of the best teams in all of NCAA football in time of possession, averaging 34 minutes per game. The Gophers have won the last two meetings against the Huskers, including in Lincoln last year, 24-17. A win tomorrow for Minnesota would mark the team's third straight win over Nebraska, which would be its longest streak against the Huskers since 1951 through 1954. Scott Frost, head coach of the Huskers, on the Minnesota Gopher running game.
The running back's an exceptional player.
Well, that was Chris Klieman. I didn't know Scott Frost.
He likes
like
Minnesota's
him.
Running backs.
He does too, I'm sure.
Yeah, they you know, they don't do a whole lot of things. They're just good at what they do. Got some really big guys up front. They've had some great backs and some answers off the run. So our defense got to be ready to do the best they can against the run and make sure not get hit with anything tricky or new.
All right, so last week I went on a limb. I said Nebraska was going to finally get that marquee win, and boy, I was so close to having that one right. I felt good about it even when Nebraska had the ball tied 29-29, and of course they had the fumble, and that ruined things because Nebraska finds a way somehow, whether unlucky or lucky or unfortunate, or they shoot themselves on the foot and they earn it. The bottom line is that Nebraska has not been able to win those close games under Scott Frost, especially against good competition. Last week, I said Huskers are going to win. I look at the emotional win games they've had where they nearly could have won at Oklahoma. They should have won at Michigan State. They honestly, I think they should have beat Michigan. The Huskers could easily be 6-1. They're that close to being 6-1. Should have beat Illinois. They could easily be 6-1. And some people could argue they could be 7-0. But they're not. They are what you are what your record is.
You played
right?
Seven games.
You are what you are. And good teams find ways to win those games. Nebraska hasn't, at least not yet. I am surprised the Huskers are a favorite in this game. I think Nebraska's due to not play so well, and I think Minnesota's sitting there waiting for them for 2 weeks. I don't know if it's a great matchup for Nebraska, although I didn't think Michigan State was a good matchup, and then they should have won. Minnesota can run the ball. Their run defense is really good. What's Nebraska's strength? Running the ball, although it's mainly Adrian Martinez, which means they're going to have to throw the ball probably a little bit more than they want to, which usually means at least a turnover from Adrian Martinez, maybe a couple. I don't know. I'm picking Minnesota, the Gophers, to beat the Huskers. After all the talk all week long, suddenly Husker Nation has risen. I've noticed on social media, jumping off the wagon about firing Frost to now, well, he's the guy. We're making strides. We're close. I can live with this because I know we're going to turn the corner. And if they lose to Minnesota this week, those people are going to go right back to their old sayings of, well, we're not as close as I thought. Maybe it's time for a change. I think Nebraska's primed to lose this week. And be 3-5.
And I'm going to do the opposite of what we did last week because I think Nebraska's going to win this one. I don't think Minnesota's a team that's as good as they have been, obviously, in the past. And I think Nebraska's going to take that step this week.
It's not a step.
Well, for them, it's a step.
Minnesota's not ranked and not a marquee
team. And that's why I feel like they're going to win because it's not as big of a – it's not the step that Michigan was last week, right? It's not the step that Oklahoma was.
Right.
You know, and that's why I feel like they're going to win this week and put themselves in a better spot here. The step is for Scott Frost, not for Nebraska. It's for
him
trying to save his job.
It's a baby step.
And so if they – because if they lose, then it's – another, like you said, it is a step back.
Right.
For him to save a job and things like that and going forward. But, yeah, Minnesota's just not a – I don't think Minnesota's a great team right now, and I think Nebraska can go in there and beat them.
They might not be, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a good feeling about this one, but who knows? We shall see. Top 25 games for this weekend of noteworthiness that we think you might be interested in as I pull this up. Cal's at number 9, Oregon tonight. Michigan State ranked 10th is at Indiana tomorrow. Central Florida is at undefeated Cincinnati, who's ranked 3rd. Florida's at LSU. Texas A&M is at Missouri. See if A&M has a hangover after beating Alabama. Arkansas hosting Auburn. Arkansas ranked 17th. Number 11, Kentucky at number 1, Georgia. Georgia's got the best defense in America. It's not even close. We mentioned BYU number 19 at Baylor. Alabama, that's number 5, is at Mississippi State. Purdue is at number 2, Iowa. It looks weird to see a 2 next to Iowa's name. TCU at number 4, Oklahoma, as we mentioned. Purdue, Iowa, by the way, 2:30 on ABC tomorrow. And Ole Miss, ranked 13th, is at Tennessee. There's some of the noteworthy top 25 matchups. MIAA football, Lincoln at Pittsburgh State at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Northwest Missouri State at Washburn. That's usually a pretty good battle at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Nebraska Kearney, Emporia State at 1 o'clock. And Central Oklahoma's at Fort Hays State, primetime tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Hays. The Big 12 men's basketball poll by the coaches has been released. Who do you think was picked to win it all in the Big 12 this year for basketball?
Oh, I didn't even look at that yet. Is it Kansas or Baylor?
Kansas.
I figured it was Kansas. Because Baylor lost so much, I didn't figure they'd put them up at the
Baylor's
top.
Baylor's not even number 2.
Yeah.
Who do you think is number 2 in the coaches poll?
Oh.
If you're listening to Brian Haney, you would know this answer. He gave it right to us on Thursday.
I was working on stuff.
So you were distracted too. See, right?
Texas.
Texas.
Yeah.
KU gets 8.
Chris Beard coming in.
KU gets 8 of the 10 first place votes. Now, obviously, you can't vote for your own team, so that means Bill Self voted for Texas. It's easy to figure out.
Yeah.
Because 8 of the 10 first place votes went to KU, and 2 went to Texas. Now we don't know who the other coach is that picked Texas. Maybe Bruce Weber. I don't know. But KU picked first. Texas second. Baylor third. Texas Tech with a new coach because Chris Beard's not at Texas 4. Oklahoma State 5. West Virginia is they actually tied Oklahoma State for 5th. Where do you think K-State is on this pecking order?
I did see where they're at.
Okay. Oklahoma 7, TCU 8, K-State 9, and all 10 coaches voted Iowa State to be the bottom.
Yeah.
It's kind of like football. You know, football, it's easy. Don't think about it. Put KU at the bottom, and then you work from there. Everybody can agree on that.
Yeah.
And basketball, we pretty much can agree almost every year for the most part, KU number one in basketball. Mm-hmm. It's just complete polar opposites.
Yeah.
I think Texas is really good. I still think Baylor's going to reload. I think Baylor's going to be really good. They've got a lot of talent, so I wouldn't write off Baylor at all. Preseason, take it with a grain of salt. All right, NFL football last night, Thursday night football. It was the Buccaneers and the Eagles. Buccaneers were up 28-7, held on the win 28-22 to improve to 5-1. Eagles fall to 2-4.
That was easy. Touchdown Fournette. He's got his second of the game and wants to make sure that Buccaneers fan gets the souvenir.
What is it that the head coach, Nick Sirianni of the Eagles, has against his running backs? He doesn't run the ball. Like, there's nine rushes all night last night against a first-year starting quarterback in Jalen Hurts.
I got
a lot of pressure.
Guy trying to trade me Miles Sanders in fantasy football. I'm like, nah, I'm good.
No,
I put Lenny Fournette in my team last night, and it worked out pretty
my
well.
My son had Miles Sanders, and he dumped him last week. He says they never give him the
they
ball.
They don't run. He's like, yeah, it doesn't make sense why you.
It doesn't.
Jalen gets a lot of carries.
It'd make more sense if the Chiefs did that because you got Patrick Mahomes. Jalen Hurts, I mean, it's first year.
Yeah.
First full year as a starter.
He's going to use him to run and pass.
Run,
and nobody
pass.
Else to run.
Do you know how he represents 87% of their yardage on offense?
That doesn't surprise me.
Well, because he's always got
play.
The ball.
I mean, you see,
yeah. All right, the Chiefs are at the Washington football team. I'm going to tell you right now, every time I see the initials WFT, I think it's WTF.
Turn it around, yeah.
Every time. Washington football team. Chiefs are 2-3. Washington football team's 2-3. Chiefs are 6.5-point favorite. Over-under on this game is 54.5 points. They'll try to bounce back on the road. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes. And what Mahomes, on whether or not, to see if I can find this cut here, on whether or not he's pressing a little bit and taking chances because of the defense being so bad.
We try to score every single time we touch the football. That's how it's been my entire career here. That's how it was. That was kind of the precedent that was set before I even started here. And that's kind of how I have my mindset going into every single game is that when we get an opportunity to go out there and have success and be successful, we have to capitalize that. And that has nothing to do with whatever is happening on the other side of the ball. It's just our job as an offense on this team.
And Mahomes points out the obvious. The offense has been doing a pretty good job, but the turnovers has made it average.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're moving the ball and moving the ball down the field at a high rate. I mean, we're doing stuff. We're executing. We're not having a lot of three and outs and stuff like that. So that's what you want to do as an offense. But I mean, once you make turnovers, once you have turnovers happen, it kind of ruins everything. It takes that great offense that we can be and just really just knocks it down to a very average one. And so if we can really cut out those turnovers over this season, and we kind of have to now, I think we could be a really, really good offense and a great one, hopefully.
And Andy Reid discusses the turnover issues his team has been dealing with.
I keep going back to the turnover part. You know, the turnovers are something that, you know, we've got to take care of. I mean, we're doing a phenomenal job per series of scoring. You know, one of the best in the history of the game. But you turn the ball over, you got a problem. I mean, that's the reality of it. You put all the yards together you want. You can put almost 90 plays together. You can do all that stuff. But we turn the ball over, it's an issue. So we've done that in really three games, two where we've had four, and then the one with the two. So, and those were the games we lost. I mean, it's that part becomes very obvious. All those games we had production. You know, there were a lot of good things, but those things, you know, we just got to put those to an end and get those taken care of. And everybody's got a piece of the pie. So, and I'm taking the blame. I mean, I'm in charge of it, so I'm taking the blame. And we've got to make sure we fix that.
All right. One of the things we're seeing with defenses is they're taking away at the long ball. They're playing two deep safeties, seeing cover two. We're seeing that they don't blitz nearly as much. Why would you blitz against Mahomes? I mean, you just get torched. So if you can get pressure with the front four, that's really helps your chances against the Chiefs. And Washington has a good front four led by Chase Young. Here's Mahomes on trying to improve reading different defensive schemes.
We face different coverages than a lot of teams in the NFL, so you just got to be able to recognize those when you see them. And we've been able to face it for a couple weeks now where teams are kind of seeing what other teams are playing to us and doing some of the similar things. And so at the end of the day, it's all about execution. It's all about us being on the same page. It's about me making the throw at the right time in the right spot. And so that's something I'll keep getting better and better at and try to find ways to score more points.
What about that Washington defense in that front four? Mahomes has some thoughts on them.
Their defensive line is talented. We know that. I think everybody in this league knows that. I mean, they have great players all the way across that D-line, and they have great players that come off the bench and play as well. And so it'll be a great challenge for our offensive line. Those guys have been playing well. They've been doing a great job. And so we'll do whatever we can to let me get the ball out of my hands fast, get it to some of the playmakers that I have around me, and let those guys make plays at the end of the day.
And the keys to winning in Washington, D.C., Andy Reid.
Well, like I said, it was turnovers. The production's there. It's the turnovers that we got to take care of. I don't want to lose track of that. But I tell you, you got to take care of that front. That's where it starts. And they're a productive group, talented, play hard, you know. So it's a great challenge for us.
All right. Taylor Heinicke is the quarterback for Washington. He'll probably look like Dan Marino against the Chiefs defense coming up on Sunday. Pregame at 11 o'clock, kickoff at noon on Z96.3 Lake. Your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Chiefs are 6.5-point favorites. Listen, the Chiefs should and really honestly have to win this game. I think they will. Washington's defense, even though it's talented, has really struggled this year. As long as the Chiefs don't turn the ball over, even if they turn over, like I said, I'll stick to my guns here. They can turn it over twice and they're fine. They turn it over 3-4 times, now you're playing with fire. And, of course, it would be nice if the defense could, you know, get a few stops in the first half, unlike what they did against the Bills, although I guess they did – well, they didn't really stop them. The Bills just shot themselves in the foot after they got the Pringle fumble, and they should have been up 14-3, to be quite honest with you. But I think the Chiefs will find a way and get it done. They should. And then they've got a big game on the horizon at Tennessee, who's supposed to get Julio Jones back for a Monday night game against the Bills. And then you got the Giants. So of the three games coming up, the toughie looks to be at Tennessee, but Washington, I wouldn't look past them. They do have talent. Their defense can cause you some problems. If the offensive line has some breakdowns, Mahomes gets hurt, or he simply, you know, turns the ball over, strip sack, fumble, or forced into making a decision he shouldn't make, then obviously all bets are off. But I think the Chiefs will win. I've got the Chiefs winning, barely covering, 6.5-point favorite. I got them winning 34-27, although that could easily be 44-37.
God, it's 44-37 against Taylor Heinicke. There's even more issues than we want to talk about.
I think we know. Would you really be surprised, Taylor Heinicke, if he threw for 300 yards and three touchdowns?
No, I
wouldn't.
But
I mean, Davis Mills threw for 300 against the Patriots.
Yeah.
Heinicke's better than Davis Mills.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Chiefs similar, 38-31, I'll say.
Okay, so we're saying another tough, tight game for the Chiefs. You just don't see a lot of blowouts in NFL anymore. That's the way it is. It's parity. Injury report for the Chiefs. Anthony Hitchens has not practiced. He limited participate yesterday with a knee. Now, if he can't go, then you have Willie Gay and Nick Bolton as your linebackers, and that might not be a bad thing. Charvarius Ward has not practiced all week, so that's still disconcerting because they would really like to have him as a big, taller corner. Blake Bell hasn't practiced all week. Tyreek Hill hasn't practiced all week with a quad, so that's concerning. Chris Jones hasn't played all week. Has he played at all this year? He's out with a wrist, and he doesn't look like he's going to play. And Joe Tooney had a broken hand that he played through last week against the Bills. He has not practiced all week, but they're not ruling him out to play on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Lucas Niang had a hamstring, but he's been a full participant for Washington. Antonio Gibson, a running back, is limited participant. They have a tackle that hasn't practiced all week long. Wide receiver Curtis Samuel hasn't practiced all week long with a groin. One of their starting guards, Brandon Scherff, has not practiced all week with a knee. So they've got some injury issues due to the Washington football team. But that's the injury report. You can read all about it at Chiefs.com. The rest of the NFL schedule, let's see here. Do we have another game in London or something?
There's like three of them, I think, this year.
8:30 in the morning, so I guess so. Dolphins at the Jaguars. What an exhilarating game that should
Jaguars
be.
Jaguars like to play one of theirs in London.
There you go. The Chiefs are at the Washington football team at noon, pregame at 11 o'clock. Rams at the Giants at noon. Texans at the Colts, both teams 1-4 at noon. Bengals at the Lions. Lions try to get off the schneid. They're 0-5. Also at noon on Sunday, Packers at the Bears. The Chargers at the Ravens is a big game. Both teams are 4-1. Who you got in that one?
I'm going to pick the Chargers.
I'm going to take the Ravens. I'm cheering for the Ravens. You know why? Because I'm not giving up on this division yet. I'm not giving up on this division. I need the Chargers to lose a couple, though. And this is a good opportunity on the road at Baltimore. I'm not worried about getting home field advantage as a Chiefs fan anymore because of three losses already. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about winning the division so that I don't have to play in the wild card round, which, by the way, they're going to have a wild card game on a Monday night this year. That's a 5-year deal that starts this year. And you know if the Chiefs are a wild card participant, they'll be the Monday night primetime game, I would bet you, road or at home. But I think as Chiefs fans, you really need to pull for the Ravens in this one. Would you agree?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Vikings at the Panthers. The Panthers 3-2 after starting 3-0. Another intriguing game, a late game on Fox at 3:05 on Sunday. It is the Oklahoma Sooner quarterback battle between Baker Mayfield of the Browns and Kyler Murray of the Cardinals. Arizona, the only undefeated team at 5-0, at the Browns, who are 3-2. Baker versus Kyler. Listen, the Cardinals are going to lose at some point. To me, this is the perfect spot. And the Browns coming off a tough loss. I'm going to take the Browns to win this one.
Yeah, I am too.
And Todd Clover and the Miami Dolphins are 72, whoever's still alive, can pop the champagne or pop the cork and hopefully not hurt themselves while doing it. The Raiders are at the Broncos, both teams 3-2. New coach for the Raiders. That's an interesting game because of the dynamics that's happened this week. I don't know how the Raiders are going to respond. Cowboys 4-1 at the Patriots 2-3, usually a marquee game. That'll be a tough game for the Cowboys, but right now, I think if you look at the NFC, you got to say that the Cowboys, the Buccaneers, and the Cardinals, and then probably the Packers are the best teams. Mm-hmm. Am I missing anybody there?
No. Not right. I mean, Rams had a little setback.
Yeah, so. Rams, you could throw them in there. That's true. They lost to the Cardinals, and Cardinals are undefeated. Yeah. So Rams, Packers, Cowboys, Buccaneers, Cardinals, that's who we're looking at. Okay.
Yeah.
And then Seahawks are at the Steelers. Both teams disappointing 2-3. No Russell Wilson. That'll be interesting. That's Sunday night football for NBC. And then Monday night football, the Bills at the Titans. That's a really interesting game. The Titans are 3-2. The Bills are 4-1. So the Chiefs, once again, will catch a team on a short week. And that doesn't seem to help the Chiefs.
It's supposed to, but what's the deal?
granted, Tennessee will stay at home for Monday night, and then they'll stay at home for the Chiefs coming up next Sunday on the 24th. But that's the look at the NFL schedule. And I leave the best for last, everyone. I leave the best for last. Oh, you know it.
Tanev has the puck at dead center. A handoff for Appleton. Empty net. Just wide off a stick. McCann in front. Bullseye! It's Brandon Tanev! It comes out to center ice. Fed a long puck by Schwartz. That's Kraken hockey, baby! The Seattle Kraken have won their first game in the National Hockey League. It's a 4-3 win.
Release the Kraken, baby!
Was that you, like, changing your voice there?
It
sounded about as enthusiastic as you've been about the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, I like that. Let's hear that again.
Comes out to center ice. Fed a long puck by Schwartz. That's Kraken hockey, baby!
That's Kraken hockey, baby.
It's Kraken hockey, baby!
4-3 win.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. You win on the road because, you know, the NHL says, welcome to the league, and your first five games are on the road, which I still don't understand. If it's the first game of all time for an expansion team, and they're the only expansion team this year, why in the world should they not play at home to start the season? I don't get it. They got to wait till October 23rd for their first home game. But they're 1-1. They barely lost to Vegas, who is one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year. And they beat Nashville on the road last night 4-3. This is, according to pundits and people know hockey better than I, they say the Kraken's roster is a team that they think will be in the playoffs in their first year. So, I adopted a good team. They're 1-1. They're batting .500 now.
Yeah.
Their first ever win. That's so exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Dusty can't hide it.
Vegas was the team that I would have, got onto if I was going to do it. You know, the run that they made their first year, and you could see that they're, you know, probably going to make the playoffs. That would have been a bandwagon for me to jump on if I wanted to do it, but I'm still not.
And a good friend of my BP,
jump on a hockey bandwagon.
My good friend of my BP was in Vegas a couple years ago, whatever. He said it was just insane, the atmosphere for the Vegas hockey game. He said it's really cool if you ever want to go. Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. The Kraken, when they release that Kraken, their first home game, that's going to be the best home ice advantage in atmosphere, even better than Vegas.
Hockey atmosphere in the desert.
I've never been to Seattle. But I kind of want to go and watch a hockey game now. I don't have a hockey team here. What about the Avalanche? It's still Colorado. And it's in Denver. That's my problem. I mean, I'm okay. I cheer for the Avs. I'm cool with it. I've gone to a game there. I'm not going to go to a Blues game. They're St. Louis. And I'm not down with St. Louis, just not. and KC has no hockey team. You know, Oklahoma City doesn't have a hockey team. Nebraska doesn't have a pro hockey team. So, yeah, I can go wherever I want to go. Somebody says, well, why are you going to adopt a Seattle Kraken? First of all, love the color scheme. Love it. Love the serpent. I love the debut video they had when they released they're going to be a new expansion team. I thought that was kick butt. I had, like, goosebumps. And I'm not this gigantic hockey fan. But I'm like, you know what? This gives me an excuse to go to Seattle. Yeah, it might rain, but the hockey is inside, so I don't worry about that. And if somebody wants to say, well, gee, Wade, you're in the Midwest, and you're going to be a Seattle Kraken fan. Listen, don't even get on me. Oh, Clover down the street over here, he's a Yankee fan and a Dolphin fan. You could explain to me how that makes any sense, okay? Treister's a Steeler fan. How does that make any sense? Okay, I get the being a Bronco or a Chiefs fan. That part I get, all right? I understand being a Thunder fan because that's the closest NBA or a Nuggets fan. But when you sit here, or an NBA, you're just a fan of a player, usually, like, you know, Jordan or Kobe or whoever it might be, LeBron. But man, I got no hockey team that's even really that nearby. And yeah. I don't think I'm a traitor by not jumping on the Colorado Avalanche because they actually are from Canada. And they moved to Denver, okay? And it's Denver. And Denver's cool, nice town. I've been to downtown. It's neat. It's okay. Nuggets are all right. But I still, there's too much orange in that town. And so I can't go all out there. Whereas I got a unique color scheme. I love it. The serpent, it's got some kick, baby. It's got some kick, baby. Release the Kraken, baby. So they're my team until they stink. And then I'll be one of those Chiefs fans that was never a fan until Mahomes became the starter. And then Mahomes retires, and then you jump off the Chiefs bandwagon. I'll be that one fan, which there are a lot of them, that were all over the Royals in 14 and 15 and now absolutely disowned them because, you know, they can't cheer for a loser because they're not true fans. No. I'm with the Kraken from day one. When that video came out on Twitter, I was all in. I was mesmerized. They're my team. Now, having said that, I reserve the right to change once. And the only way I change once, hold on, the only way I'm going to change is if Kansas City gets their own professional NHL hockey team. If that happens, I'm probably going to jump ship, no pun intended, from Seattle to Kansas City. However, if the mascot stinks and the color scheme's bad, I may stick with the Kraken. I may stick with it. But how much better of a logo and how much better of a theme and motto can you have than release the Kraken? Come on, man.
Release the Kraken. You know how many weird looks I get when I tell people I'm a Spurs fan, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's another example of...
But there's,
like,
no NBA team in, like, Kansas City. There is one in Denver.
I don't cheer for teams in Denver. I don't cheer for teams in St. Louis. I don't cheer for teams in Oklahoma. So I'm left with...
Got to jump Oklahoma, issues, fly over to Texas to San Antonio.
Yeah.
That's what you
do. I can't be like you and say I'm a day one Spurs fan because that's not true. I was Bulls because Jordan played for him.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
I think I would have been, if I was alive at the time when the Chiefs started or when the Texans moved to the Kansas City or when the Royals started in 69, I think I could tell you I probably would have been a fan from day one. But I couldn't be. I was born after they started.
Yeah.
But here's what's really cool for me is Seattle. I can be a fan from day one.
I wish I could be a Kansas City Kings fan. I wish they had a basketball team.
I remember
team,
that.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, I was alive. I don't remember much of it at all. But that's what I wish.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if Kansas City would get a basketball team,
Spurs
would still be my team, but Kansas City team would also be my team. Like,
yeah. If Kansas City got an NBA team, the Thunder would fall to number two on my list very quickly, even though I like the Thunder and the atmosphere. And in hockey, I said I'll jump ship maybe if it's the right mascot and color scheme. But come on, man. It's going to be hard to beat Release the Kraken.
That's Kraken hockey, baby.
Kraken hockey, baby. Enjoy some high school football, baby. Tonight on the radio.
Yeah, Katy Country 94. It's St. John's Sipton at Lakeside, katycountry94.com as well. And then on Z96.3, NCKSSports.com. Beloit at Minneapolis tonight. Watch the live video. Everything starts at 6:30, the pregame, and kickoff at 7 for our games.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
That's Kraken hockey, baby. The Seattle Kraken have won their first game in the National Hockey League.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.